This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Genesis. Please open your Bibles to the book of Genesis as Pastor Sandy teaches through chapters 30 through 34.
So he lodged there that same night and took what came to his hand as a present for Esau his brother, 200 female goats and 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, not a bad thing, 30 milk camels with their colts, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 foals. This was a sizable peace offering, and he's going to send it ahead of him. Then he delivered them to the hand of his servants, every drove by itself, and said to his servants, "Pass over before me and put some distance between successive droves." In other words, spread it out. It'll appear more impressive that way. And he commanded the first one, saying, "When Esau, my brother, meets you and asks you, saying, 'To whom do you belong and where are you going? Whose are these in front of you?' Then you shall say, 'They are your servant Jacob's. It is a present sent to my lord Esau, and behold, he also is behind us.'" And so he commanded the second, the third, and all who followed the drove, saying, "In this manner you shall speak to Esau when you find him, and also say, 'Behold, your servant Jacob is behind us.'" And he said, "I will appease him with the present that goes before me, and afterward I will see his face. Perhaps he will accept me." And so the present went on before him, but he himself lodged that night in the camp. Jacob is still calculating. He's still a plotter. He's still a planner. Here he's calculating for maximum effect. He sends his gifts out in waves of welcome to sort of gradually soften up Esau's heart. Here's the only problem. Once again, Jacob concocts a plan and relies on his own wisdom. He's trying to manipulate the situation rather than trust in God. And of course, this has been his lifelong problem. God is about to cure him of it, though, once and for all. Verse 22. "And he arose that night and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons, and crossed over the ford of Jabbok." The name Jabbok means emptying. And it's a tiny little stream that comes off of the mountains and empties down into the Jordan River. But this name is also prophetic. For here at the Jabbok, this is where Jacob empties himself of his confidence and his self-reliance and his self-dependence and self-assurance. He took his family, sent them over the brook, and sent over what he had. Then Jacob was alone. And underline those words, Jacob was alone at the Jabbok. Jacob comes to the end of his rope. He has emptied himself of all of his confidence. He is alone. He is vulnerable. Now Jacob is worried that at any time Esau is going to jump out of the bushes and try to kill him. Mama isn't around anymore to save his skin. Jacob knows at this time the only thing that he can do is to be totally dependent upon God. He faces the dark of the night. He faces an uncertain tomorrow. And all he has at his disposal now is faith alone. At the brook called emptying, Jacob empties himself. And when a man empties himself, he will soon see the face of God. Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. And I'm sure at first Jacob thought it was Esau. Esau's attacking me. Esau's jumped out of the bushes. He wants to kill me with his bare hands. And they're wrestling and they're tossing and they're scrapping and they're rolling on the ground. And remember, Esau was a tough guy. He was an outdoorsman. He was a hunter. He was a killer. Imagine Jacob is flailing and fighting for his very life. Verse 25. "Now when he saw that he did not prevail against him, he touched the socket of his hip. And the socket of Jacob's hip was out of joint as he wrestled with him." Jacob fought so furiously and so ferociously, the man that he was wrestling with tried to loosen Jacob's grip. And so he reached down and he touched Jacob's hip socket and threw his hip out of joint. It must have been painful. I imagine Jacob like a football player who, you know, grabs for his hamstring or grabs for his knee once he twists and blows out the ACL or whatever. I can imagine Jacob grabbing, you know, his hip with his hands, wincing in pain. And the man who was wrestling with Jacob said, "Let me go, for the day breaks." But he said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." As dawn approaches, it dawns on Jacob that this isn't Esau he's been wrestling with. This isn't Esau he's been tangling with. This is a divine wrestler. In fact, the man asks him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." And he said, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel. For you have struggled with God and with men and have prevailed." And the name Israel means Prince of God. It was through this experience that Jacob goes from being a heel catcher, a deceiver, a double crosser, into being a Prince of God. Guys, let me ask you a question. Have you been wrestling lately? You've been wrestling and scrapping lately? Perhaps you thought you were wrestling with your wife, or with your kids, or with your boss, or with your ex-spouse, or with some bully in the neighborhood. But in reality, could it be that you've been wrestling with God? All your life you've manipulated and connived to get your way, but now you've met your match. You've encountered a situation where you know you need help. That's what happens to Jacob here. And notice what he does. When it dawns on him that he's wrestling with none other than God, he stops his wrestling and he starts praying. He tightens his grip. He refuses to let go until he receives a blessing. He finally admits his need. Hey, Jacob is desperate for God's blessing. He surrenders. He no longer fights with God. He now embraces God. He replaces a headlock with a hug. But here's what's so intriguing. He now puts as much effort in his faith as he did in the fight. He went from wrestling to grabbing hold of him and holding on to him tightly. This is how God wants us to approach him. When we realize that we've been wrestling with God, that we've been bucking against him, we need to surrender and we need to grab hold of God and request his blessing. We need to take all the effort that we had exhausted in fighting him and spend it in following him. We need to cry out to God for his highest and holiest and richest blessing and not let go until we receive all that God has for us. Notice verse 29. Then Jacob asked, saying, "Tell me your name, I pray." And he said, "Why is it that you ask about my name?" And he blessed him there. And Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, which means face of God. He says, "For I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved." That's why I say, all the time he thought he was wrestling with Esau, in reality, he was wrestling with God. In fact, I believe it was none other than our Lord Jesus, with whom Jacob wrestled with all night. And I've known many a person, myself included, who has wrestled with the lordship of Jesus before sincerely surrendering and seeking God's best for my life. It was a time when I was a mighty wrestler, when I fought it, when I refused to surrender, when I bucked the will of God. Finally, when I realized God for who he is, when I realized his greatness and his glory, instead of fighting him, I clung to him and I asked for his blessing, and I've never been the same since. Verse 31, just as he crossed over Penuel, the sun rose on him and he limped on his hip. Notice he wrestled with God, but it cost him. And you can wrestle with God if you like, but it'll cost you. It took away his pride and his self-sufficiency. And for the rest of his life, Jacob limped. And what is a limp but a sign of weakness? It's a permanent reminder that you can't stand on your own two feet. It's a permanent reminder that you should walk by faith, not according to your own cleverness. Therefore, to this day, the children of Israel do not eat the muscle that shrank, which is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip in the muscle that shrank. And this is a tradition that's still practiced by the Orthodox Jews even today. Well, chapter 33 tells us what happened the next morning. Now Jacob lifted his eyes and looked, and there Esau was coming, and with him were 400 men. And so he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and the two maidservants. And he put the maidservants and their children in front, Leah and her children behind, and Rachel and Joseph last. Then he crossed over before them and bowed himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. But Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. And he lifted his eyes and saw the women and children and said, "Who are these with you?" And he said, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant." What a beautiful picture to see God restoring a broken family. Verse 6. Then the maidservants came near, they and their children, and bowed down. And Leah also came near with her children, and they bowed down. Afterward, Joseph and Rachel came near, and they bowed down. And then Esau said, "What do you mean by all this company which I met?" In other words, he's talking about all these gifts that have been coming at him in waves. You know, what's this all about? And Jacob said, "These are to find favor in the sight of my Lord." But Esau said, "I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself." And Jacob said, "No, please, if I have now found favor in your sight, then receive my present from my hand, inasmuch as I have seen your face, as though I had seen the face of God, and you were pleased with me." Isn't it amazing that once a man makes peace with God, he can make peace with everyone else he's been fighting with? Isn't that amazing? Jacob realizes that the hostility with Esau has been his own fault. Esau hasn't been his enemy. Jacob has been his own worst enemy. And that can be true of us as well. Hey, when a man makes peace with God, peace with his brother will follow. Jacob is so grateful for what God has done. In verse 11, he begs Esau to take his gift. He says, "Please take my blessing that is brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me and because I have enough." And he urged him and he took it. Then Esau said, "Let us take our journey. Let us go and I will go before you." But Jacob said to him, "My Lord knows that the children are weak and the flocks and herds which are nursing are with me. And if the men should drive them hard one day, all the flock will die. Please let my Lord go on ahead before his servant. I will lead on slowly at a pace which the livestock that go before me and the children are able to endure until I come to my Lord in Seir." Even though this reunion and this reconciliation are wonderful, Jacob also knows that spiritually speaking, he and his brother don't really have a lot in common. They're headed in different directions. And there's no real need for them to continue traveling together. And so they just sort of make their peace. And Esau says, "You go your way, I'll go my way." Verse 15. And Esau said, "Now let me leave with you some of the people who are with me." But he said, "What need is there? Let me find favor in the sight of my Lord." So Esau returned that day on his way to Seir, and Jacob journeyed to Succoth, built himself a house, and made booths or shelters for his livestock. Therefore, the name of the place is called Succoth, or booths. Then Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Paddan Aram, and he pitched his tent before the city. Now, Jacob made a wise decision to separate himself from Esau. But as we'll see in chapter 34, it was a poor decision to settle next to this pagan city of Shechem. And he bought the parcel of land where he had pitched his tent from the children of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money. Then he erected an altar there and called it El Elohi Israel, which means God, the God of Israel. And for the first time, Jacob builds an altar. He is now a worshiper of God. Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne to Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. Now remember, Dinah was the only sister in a family of 12 brothers. I can understand why she would need some female companionship, don't you? All she really wanted to do was to find a girlfriend to hang out with. But sometimes even such an innocent desire can lead us astray. For understand, the likelihood of finding the right kind of friend in the wrong kind of place is not very good. I hope you high school kids heard that. The likelihood of finding the right kind of friend in the wrong kind of place is not very good. And Shechem was the wrong kind of place. Shechem was a Canaanite city. It was full of wickedness and idolatry. And Dinah is about to meet it head on. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her and lay with her and violated her. The prince turned out to be a pervert. The son of the king of Shechem raped the daughter of Israel. And his soul was strongly attracted to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob. And he loved the young woman and spoke kindly to the young woman. So Shechem spoke to his father Hamor, saying, "Give me this young woman as a wife." And Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter. On the heels of Jacob's spiritual breakthrough, his newfound faith is tested with a tragedy. And guys, the most difficult tests by far are those which bring harm to our kids. Now his sons were with his livestock in the field. So Jacob held his peace until they came. Then Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. And the sons of Jacob came in from the field when they heard it. And the men were grieved and very angry because he had done a disgraceful thing in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, a thing which ought not to be done. But Hamor spoke with them, saying, "The soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please give her to him as a wife and make marriages with us. Give your daughters to us and take our daughters to yourself. So you shall dwell with us and the land shall be before you. Dwell and trade in it and acquire possessions for yourself in it." Notice, an apology is never offered. Verse 11. Then Shechem said to her father and her brothers, "Let me find favor in your eyes, and whatever you say to me, I will give. Ask me ever so much dowry and gift, and I will give according to what you say to me, but give me the young woman as a wife." The rapist doesn't even apologize either. Instead, he tries to cover up his crime with a huge dowry. He wants to buy off their approval. And this really made Dinah's brothers mad. They were pretty ticked. Verse 13. But the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor his father and spoke deceitfully because he had defiled Dinah their sister. And they said to them, "We cannot do this thing to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a reproach to us. But on this condition we will consent to you. If you will become as we are, if every male of you is circumcised, then we will give our daughters to you, and we will take your daughters to us, and we will dwell with you, and we will become one people. But if you will not heed us and be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and be gone." Now they give a religious reason for the circumcision. But these brothers, they've got some other motives. They've got another plan. They're about to avenge their sister. Verse 18. And their words pleased Hamor and Shechem, Hamor's son. So the young man did not delay to do the thing because he delighted in Jacob's daughter. He was more honorable than all the household of his father. And Hamor and Shechem, his son, came to the gate of their city and spoke with the men of their city, saying, "These men are at peace with us. Therefore, let them dwell in the land and trade in it. And indeed, the land is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters to us as wives, and let us give them our daughters. Only on this condition will the men consent to dwell with us, to be one people. If every male among us is circumcised as they are circumcised, will not their livestock, their property, and every animal of theirs be ours? Only let us consent to them, and they will dwell with us." Verse 24. And all who went out of the gate of his city heeded Hamor and Shechem his son. Every male was circumcised, all who went out of the gate of his city. Now it came to pass on the third day when they were in pain. Oh boy. Man, I can feel that pain. I just had a hernia operation. But that's nothing compared to a circumcision. These are adult males, man. They've just had this, they've just been circumcised with no anesthesia. These guys are in pain. These guys are sore. They are hurting. They are totally incapacitated. They are sitting ducks. And two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, each took his sword and came boldly upon the city and killed all of the males. And they killed Hamor and Shechem his son with the edge of the sword and took Dinah from Shechem's house and went out. And it sort of illustrates the old phrase, don't get caught with your pants down. Here's a serious case of just that. Well, the sons of Jacob came upon the slain and plundered the city because their city had been, sister had been defiled. They took their sheep, their oxen, and their donkeys, what was in the city and what was in the field, and all their wealth, all their little ones and their wives, they took captive, and they plundered even all that was in their houses. And notice, all this brutality was done without Jacob's knowledge or approval. This is excessive. I know what they did to Dinah, but this is excessive. To go through to kill all the males in the city, to plunder everything, to wipe out and slaughter the city. And it was all done without Jacob's knowledge and approval. Hey, this is an important point. Jacob has lost control of his family. And later we'll see that when the brothers sell Joseph into slavery, they'll lie to Jacob. Jacob's totally unaware. Apparently, Jacob was a very weak leader at home. He played favorites among siblings. We'll see that later too. He was a stranger to his kids. And it could be that one of the reasons that Dinah fell into the hands of the prince is that she was looking for a father's love in the wrong place. Looking for a love that her own father never provided for her. Fathers, we need to love our daughters. And Dad, if you don't love your daughter in a wholesome and healthy way, she will find love in an unhealthy way in the arms of a pagan Shechem. Well, verse 30 says, then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, you have troubled me by making me obnoxious among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites. And since I am few in number, they will gather themselves together against me and kill me. I shall be destroyed, my household and I. I'm sure the brothers were thinking, you didn't do anything, and so we did. You didn't lead, and so we took action. Guys, that's what will happen if the father doesn't stand up and take control of his home. And notice here, this is an example of Jacob's leadership. All he cares about here, notice, is his own reputation. You know, this is what the people will think about me. What might possibly happen to me? If he had cared as much about Dinah and her needs, the whole incident may have never happened. Verse 31, but they said, should he treat our sister like a harlot? It took the boys of the family to care about their sister. What they did was wrong. What they did was savage. What they did was excessive. But at least they cared. And Jacob certainly shared the blame. Guys, it's a rule. When a father refuses to take charge, his kids will take over.
Listening to Bible teaching here on the radio is a huge blessing that many of our brothers and sisters in other parts of the world simply don't have. We rejoice in this opportunity to share Pastor Sandy's messages with you. We do want to be sure to remind you that radio is not a church. Radio should be a complement to what God is already doing in your personal discipleship through the local body of believers that you're a part of. Maybe you're listening today. You don't have a home church. You've visited various places, but nothing seems to fit. First, if you live in the Atlanta, Georgia area, we want to personally invite you to join us for worship at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain. We meet every Sunday morning at 9:30 and 11:15 a.m. For more information, including driving directions, please log on to sandyadams.org and follow the link to the church website. Now, if you're listening outside of the Atlanta, Georgia area and are looking for a home church, we encourage you to log on to calvarychapel.com and find a Calvary Chapel in your area that teaches through the Bible just like Pastor Sandy does each day here on this program. Well, we wish we had more time today, but we've come to the close of today's broadcast. Be sure to remember to join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through God's Word. That's next time on Sandy Adams Radio.